Hello and all welcome to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. It's getting to that silly season, isn't it? So much going on. Mark Langdon will be previewing all of the Premier League football this weekend, a brief look back on what was a really exciting few rounds of Champions League fixtures, and of course Dan Charles will be with us later on in the show to talk us through all things EFL. Mark, it was an entertaining few days in the Champions League. We'll start with Manchester United, who, as a neutral, it's great fun to watch. I suspect if you're a United fan, it's slightly frustrating at the moment.
Well, yeah, and throwing away the the win twice. I mean, they were 2-0 up and feeling like they were in control. 3-1 again in control. And now they're looking like that. You know, qualification is unlikely. They're not only have they got to beat Bayern Munich, they then need the other game to end in a draw. I mean, you would have thought that it's over for United, and it's all about the defence, isn't it? Because they've scored 3 goals in every away game in the Champions League this season and picked up 1 point, which is, that's just silly, isn't it, really? And Onana, who had been playing better, I think, in recent weeks. And we shouldn't forget that it was his penalty save against Copenhagen that kind of kept their Champions League hopes alive for as long as they were. He's made 2 absolute blunders. The first one, I think, is more forgivable because the Galatasaray wall splits. And you know what he's trying to do, at least. You know, he's trying to, gamble, isn't he? Gambling where Ziyech is going, and it doesn't work out like that. So I can at least understand why he's done what he's done. The second one, it's an absolute joke, really, to defend like that, really. I don't know what he's trying to do, Jack. Do you? I know you're in the pub, but thing. I mean, you would have done better. No. You would have done better after 4 pints.
Probably better on 4 pints than sober. It's Yeah, you see these kind of, it's always difficult to judge goalkeepers too harshly because they do have such a tough job and they are the last line of error. But like you say, it wasn't even you could see what he was trying to do. And I think sometimes mistakes occur and you go, I can see how that's happened. I mean, I was just looking at that and going, wow, I mean, that game was pretty much wrapped up if it wasn't for his foolishness. And yeah, a shocking display.
And the other, I suppose, point is just longer term. Like, are the United defenders ever going to have full faith in Onana? He's great with his feet, but you want primarily them to be good, to be a very good goalkeeper. And I mean, just think reliability is so important. You've probably known it yourself, Jack, supporting Norwich, when you've had a reliable goalkeeper and when you've had one that makes you feel nervy. And the difference is enormous. And sometimes the nervy ones are capable of producing these wonder saves and having, great games. But I think from a goalkeeper, you just want consistency. You just want 7-8 out of 10 every week, don't you? You don't want somebody to be a 9 and then a 2 because that's not the way to go, really, because it just makes everybody jittery around you. Obviously, United have got issues in midfield in terms of personnel. A lot of players out at the moment. But I think that should disappoint. Ten Hag said afterwards that they controlled the game, but I don't think that was true. I don't think it was a game that you could control. It was just absolutely chaotic. And I just feel like a better side than United would have been able to have slowed that game down at times and then just pick Galatasaray off, because Galatasaray were throwing just everybody forward. And United got sucked into that rather than just being patient and picking a pass and winning the game and just showing a cool head in that last 20 minutes when there was still plenty of opportunities there for them. So big blow for them. And, it wasn't a difficult group. I mean, Copenhagen, Galatasaray, you should be able to finish above them. And if they don't, it's been a really disappointing campaign.
I'm glad you mentioned how frantic it was. I couldn't believe, the early, start of the game, they'd got themselves into a position, even at 3-3. I mean, there could have been far more goals after that. I mean, Galatasaray had 16 shots. United had 17. I mean, that paints a picture of just how open it was. And it just struck me as an inability from Ten Hag to change it in game. And I think that would be a concern if I was a United fan.
Yeah, I'm going to give him a bit of slack here, though. I mean, you look at that bench and like not easy to change it at the moment, really, given the amount of players they've got out. You know, if you think that Casemiro, Mason Mount, Christian Eriksen, just there, is like three midfielders that could all do something different. You know, Casemiro protects the defence. You know, Eriksen can maybe keep the ball. Mason Mount, very good at sort of, when he's playing well, at sort of pressing opponents and winning the ball back and kind of diligently getting about his work. So I'll cut Ten Hag some slack there and just say that, you know, I don't think it's the substitutions necessarily that's the issue here. I just think it's the goalkeeper, and he bought the goalkeeper. You know, they spent a lot of money on him, and it was because Ten Hag wanted him, and you know, that's the way it goes.
Might be a Nana at the front door, Mark, trying to interject into that.
I tell you, I'm not going to. Yeah, I won't answer the door. I'll probably drop the parcel like he would.
If it was frustration for Manchester United fans, it was also frustration for Newcastle, Mark. Different circumstances in this. And I think, you know, if you look at the balance of play and hadn't watched the game, you would have probably gone, oh, your Newcastle should be very happy to have picked up a point. But the fashion in which PSG equalised was just horrendous, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I just think that in the Champions League, I do think that a lot of those decisions are given.
That doesn't make it still not harsh, though, does it? Just because
it's harsh, really harsh, really, really harsh. But don't you find with VAR that, you know, fans of teams, and you're neutral in this one, but fans of teams only ever get worked up when it's their team that's wrong? Like, you know, when it sort of, you know, if Newcastle get a positive VAR decision, and everybody else thinks it's a nonsense, you don't get Newcastle fans coming on going, it's a disgrace. You know what I mean? I think all football fans need to pull together if they want rid of VAR and sort of, you know, not be joyful when they're on the right end of one, if that makes sense. But
do you not think, I mean, particularly as a match going fan, Mark, like you are, and you had the perfect example when you were playing Chelsea, it just ruins the flow of a match. I know this isn't what we're talking about in this situation, but in terms of, you know, an entertaining spectacle, I just think, particularly if you're at the game, it's not so bad if you're watching it on the telly. No, but
I just want to trust the referees more. The referee in that PSG Newcastle game is one of the best in the world, if not the best. And he kind of, you know, he sees it in real time. He, like, you know, made a decision that I think, when he said no penalty, that I think most people agreed with and felt that that was like the common sense outcome from that sort of deflection. And at real speed, you know, I think slowing the game down really doesn't do kind of anybody any favours a lot of the time. I just prefer it if we trusted officials. Obviously heartbreaking for Newcastle because they've got so many injuries at the moment. It was a really tough away game for them. They kind of nicked the goal on the break. They defended just like Atletico Madrid. I know Eddie Howe went to watch Diego Simeone, didn't he, a few years ago when he was out of work, and seems to have brought back some of that template. And they just put everything on the line and just tried, you know, just their guts out, really. And it would have been an incredible blow. I mean, if you look at it from a neutral point of view, I mean, PSG had enough chances to win the game easily, never mind get a late equaliser. Bacalà, he could have had a hat-trick. He was second-half sub, could have had a hat-trick. Kept PSG alive.
Like nearly five, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, let's face it. You know, on the balance of play, it was the least PSG deserved, but it leaves a bitter taste, I think, the way that the equaliser came about. We've got, a situation now where that group is still very much alive. I know, you know, it would have been much better for Newcastle to get the win because it then would have been in their own hands. But PSG have got to go to Dortmund and do their business, and they haven't been very good away from home in the Champions League so far. Dortmund have qualified, but are going to want to finish on top spot. So I don't think it's all doom and gloom for Newcastle, even though it will feel like it, you know, for a while yet. But on the balance of play, it was the least that PSG deserved. I mean, they could have won the game by a couple of goals quite easily, I think.
Yeah, it certainly sets that group up beautifully for the last round of fixtures. Quick word on Man City and Arsenal. Mark, Man City coming from behind to win. Sure what more there is to say.
Yeah, there. I mean, I think City, you can sort of discuss them more in the sort of big match. They've got Spurs coming up, but you know, Pep Guardiola wasn't happy with the defending in the first half, but you know, they've got that quality in the final third, and when they put it together, it makes all the difference. And you know, Arsenal have got that quality in the final third as well. We haven't seen it in every Premier League game this season, and Long's maybe played into Arsenal's hands with naive defending, where they were so high.
Nice.
they had more possession than Arsenal, but they just left so much space for Martinelli, Saka and Jesus. And if you can't put pressure on the ball and you can't stop Arsenal putting the ball sort of through, then you're in a world of pain. And it looked like an easy group for Arsenal when the draw was made, but you still got to go and actually win the games, and they've done it in good style.
Top of the Premier League table, going well in Europe. Things looking up at Arsenal. There we go. We'll get on to discussing the English teams at length more throughout the rest of the show, Mark. Sad news earlier in the week. We heard about the death of Terry Venables, a man who had such an influence on the game. And I know you've got fond memories of him. A really sad bit of news. I know he'd been ill for a little while, but a huge impact, not only on English football, but across the continent as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, his Tottenham team was the first one that I can remember, you know, as a Spurs fan, sort of late 80s, finished third in the league under him. You know, Gascoigne and Lineker, that team then went on to win the FA Cup, beating Arsenal, a kind of dominant Arsenal team in the semi-final. So, when he was ousted by Alan Sugar, there was a lot of heartache at Tottenham at the time. I think virtually everybody was Team Eltel in that particular legal wrangle. And then he went on to a really popular Euro sort of England team because I think it shows that you actually don't need to win to be remembered. You only remember winners. But that Euro 96 team is still spoken about so fondly. Can still kind of see Gazza just not getting his toe to that chance against Germany in the semi-finals. But the win over Holland in the group stage, one of the absolute great moments, supporting England, the Gazza goal against Scotland as well. So, it's really sad news. I couldn't believe it, though, when I actually met him, that he wasn't a punter, because I think, I don't know. I mean, you just assumed Terry Venables, he liked to drink. He was sort of lad about town. You just assumed he was into his betting as well. But we spoke to him after he did the presentation for when Steve Palmer won one of his two Sports Betting Journalist of the Year awards. And he said that betting was one of the few vices he hadn't taken up. But a real popular figure as a football manager. And even before that, I mean, I obviously don't remember him as a player, but I think somebody that had an impact on a lot of lives. You know, there's a lot of love for him, other clubs as well as Spurs. But certainly somebody that I'll always remember.
I think you're right in saying, Mark. I mean, it's just as true now as it was then. I mean, football, you know, at the heart of it is about winning, but you can be remembered as a great by not necessarily winning. I mean, Euro 96 was before my time, but having sort of read about and listened to it and watched some of the matches back, like, England weren't particularly impressive in some of those games, but that tournament will be remembered so fondly forever, thanks to, you know, Venables and what he did. And also, like, having read a bit about his kind of tactical work, like, really ahead of his times.
Yeah, I think definitely that, you sort of, when people talk about sort of, you know, Barcelona, him playing a very different style to kind of what they were used to and revolutionising them. A little bit of name dropping. I was working with Mark Bosnich on Australian TV earlier on this week, and he was saying that the Australian players, when he went to manage Australia, like, they'd just never been the ones that Because at the time, you know, not many were in sort of Europe. You know, they were still playing in the homeland. And he said, like, you know, it was something that the players, their eyes were just like wide open. Like they couldn't believe the detail that was going into it. You know, he was on, you know, way ahead of anything they were used to at the time. So yeah, a sad loss. He lived a, you know, until he was here, we lived a very good and positive life. So yeah. Thank you, Eltel, for all he did at Spurs.
Absolutely. Thoughts with his family. Right, let's get on to the Premier League action. We'll start with the big match, Manchester City against Tottenham, then. Let's take a look at the prices for this one. 4:30 on Sunday, 3-10, Manchester City, 5-1, the draw, 15-2. Spurs, Mark, I think you were fairly level-headed, even when, you know, the heady heights of Premier League football that you had under Ange at the start of this season. Things have tailed off slightly since then. I mean, what's the mood amongst the camp?
I'd say it's mixed. You know, the popular podcast did a show this week where, you know, how much Ange is too much Ange, and so there are questions being asked. It was a very bullish team.
About questions they asked about Ange?
Well, the team he picked was very, very attack minded against Aston Villa. Some would say it was bordering on kind of crazy to not have a defensive midfielder or a centre-back in it. I would say they played really well for a large part of that game, and yeah, probably one of their best performances of the season. I said before, Jack, you know, they were really hot. They were running hot. They were scoring all their chances. They were nicking games late on. You know, they were probably conceding too few goals on the chances they were giving up, and the luck was riding with them. It flipped, and you know, they played really well for the first 20 minutes against Chelsea. Then you get red card, the game absolutely changes. Concede two goals in injury time at Wolves. They didn't play well in that game, but on another day you see it out and it's a win. And then against Aston Villa, I thought Martinez was the man of the match, and they could quite easily have won that game. But it is three losses on the spin, and I suppose the Ange bounce has gone, probably going to be four after this trip to the Etihad, but so many injuries, a lot of suspensions. I'm pretty chilled out about this. They were never going to win the league. I mean, anybody that was sort of seriously talking them up as title contenders, I think was, that was nonsensical. What they're trying to
it's
do
a
is
dream,
to call,
though, Mark. You've got to have a little.
But to dream is fine. But then to then throw it on the team that they're kind of blowing a title chance is just a load of rubbish, really. This is a team that's trying to qualify for Europe. They'll be hoping it's Champions League, but I don't think anybody was expecting much from them this season. They've probably overachieved to some extent, and The kind of balance of the results is what, you know, it's gone from extremes, isn't it? So high of winning all them games, and then you get the lower three losses on the bounce. If they would have like won one, lost one, there wouldn't be this panic that's in some places, not in all. I think most supporters are pretty sensible about it. But one thing is for certain, the manager's not going to take a step backwards. He clearly define how he wants to play, and those players that can do it will stay, and you know, those that can't, and you know, you look at someone like Højbjerg and Eric Dier, he just doesn't think that they can do that job, and they both played against Wolves and the team didn't play well. So I think Postecoglou is very much about the process and not the result, and initially at least. And I mean, the process against Aston Villa was better than in a lot of the wins. But I mean, they've got it all on here. Without Romero and Van de Ven, going to the Etihad is difficult.
City, though, not perfect, Mark. I mean, it's a tough game. They're basically threes on. It's but more drop points last weekend. I think we'd really bigged that game up, hadn't we? And actually, it wasn't overly impressed with what I saw. I don't know if it was the early kickoff factor or but they're not humming at the moment.
No, that's absolutely fair. 2-0 down against Leipzig. They're not defending particularly well. They're not controlling the match like you expect them to. And even in the final third, like against Liverpool, just lacked that killer instinct, really. There were not loads of chances for them, but there were opportunities to create the chance, if that makes sense. And, like, you know, Doku, he's a very exciting player. He's sort of, I think he might be a better Adama Traore, but there are times when he kind of just gets his head down, and actually that's not what City are about, is it? You know, and he might like dribble across the pitch rather than sort of create the opportunity. And I always think City are at their best when they do the quick passing, because that is almost impossible to stop. And we saw that in the second half against Leipzig. Foden started getting onto the ball more, and they just zipped it around. And when they do that, they are the best team around. But you're not having to do much to score against them at the moment. I mean, Leipzig, you know, sometimes it just punts up the top of the pitch, and a Pender was just in. So, you know, Tottenham have got a lot of pace on the counter attack with Son and Johnson particularly. So they'll believe that they can sort of create opportunities in the game. I'm just not sure how Emerson and Ben Davis stop Erling Haaland.
You don't sound overly confident, but City, I guess, tough to back at the price. What's the bet for this one?
Yeah, I mean, what, City around 2-7, 9-1 Spurs, 5-1 the draw. I mean, it shows where I think Tottenham are at for this game in particular. I was going to go for Man City to win and both teams to score. Man City have only kept 3 clean sheets in their last 17 games in all competitions. And I think we've seen enough of Tottenham to know that they carry an attacking punch and will keep on stepping forward, kind of no matter what the score is.
Okay, great stuff. Let's spin through the rest of the Premier League action. Okay, no early kickoff on the Saturday this week, so we'll start with the 3 o'clock fixtures. Arsenal against Wolves first up, 2-7 Arsenal, 9-2 the draw, 9-1 Wolves. Starting to feel a little bit sorry for Wolves. Mark, I didn't think I'd ever say that, but I am.
Yeah, I mean, you know, more VAR heartache for them, been a kind of theme of the season. And just another thing that came out of that defeat against Fulham were the bookings to Gomez and Lamina, which means they're suspended for the trip to the Emirates. And that's their kind of heart of their midfield sort of taken away. So on their day, Wolves have shown they can be a dangerous side, haven't they? But, you know, without those players, I think this should be comfortable enough for Arsenal. I'm going to go for Arsenal to win an under 3.5 goals. They cut loose the Gunners against Lens on Wednesday. But in the Premier League, more often than not, been a grind, isn't it, for the Gunners this season? I sort of see it being more like the Brentford game than the Lens one for them on Saturday.
OK, well, Brentford next up. Let's preview that one. Brentford against Luton, 9-20. Brentford, 7-2 the draw, 11-2 Luton. And I was chatting to a few Luton fans in the week, Mark, and they're starting to dare to dream a little bit after this Everton points deduction. I mean, it's still unlikely that Luton survive, but a win last weekend, looking upwards rather than downwards, good time to be a Luton fan.
Not as hapless, I think, as what many had predicted pre-season. You could say that about Wolves as well, but I think Luton are more competitive. They're staying in games, and even, you know, even if they don't win, they're nearly always competitive, and they of course got that win against Crystal Palace. I'm going to go for the draw in this game, and it's purely because I think Brentford are at their best when there's a lot of space in behind for their quick attackers to take advantage. And actually, in this game, being good at set pieces and, you know, those long throws and the corners and whatever, like, Luton should be able to deal with that if Luton have got a strength, it's their physicality. Brentford, in games they're expected to win, they don't always win. Now, they did beat Burnley, but if you look, they lost to Everton. They've drawn at home to Palace and Bournemouth as well. So they're not a team I like at really short prices, Brentford. I think they're almost sort of more suited to playing against better teams.
I loved listening to Troy Townsend talking about Elise's goal last weekend, and Max Rushton on Guardian sort of asked him, like, what did he think of the goal? And he was like, I didn't see it. He was at the game, but the visibility is so bad at the ground. He said he saw him pick the ball up, and then the ball was in the back of the net.
He's a good player.
brilliant player, such a unique ground. Let's take a look at Burnley against Sheffield United, a game that wouldn't look too out of missing the Championship. 4-5 Burnley, 13-5 the draw, 7-2 Sheffield United. Burnley odds on at home. Never thought I'd see the day.
I'm going to go for them to win. Yeah, they dominated large parts against West Ham last week. I know they lost a game 2-1 in the last 10 minutes. But if you look at the 4 points, they have come against Nottingham Forest and Luton. And they've only played one bottom half team at home so far this season. So I think that there's an opportunity here now for Burnley. And they've got to take it. And I mean, Sheffield United were terrible against Bournemouth last week. Really poor performance. Didn't expect it after a couple of good results, but sort of really slipped back into the bad old ways. I mean, I think it will be a Championship game next season. But I'd go for Burnley here. Yeah, I know. So I can understand the nervousness about backing them at odds on. But they don't play Sheffield United at home every week, do they?
Do you think it's fair to say that for both teams, this is almost season defining?
I never go that big because there's always another game.
Come on, we need a title, Mark. We need a clip or something for social.
Apologies. Yeah, you're not gonna be able to sort of clip this one up and put it on Twitter, are you? No, it's the most important game because it's the next one.
There we go. God, always so sensible. Saturday, 5:30, Forest against Everton, 7-4 Forest, 9-4 the draw, 8-5 Everton. It was kind of quite sadistic, really, Mark, after, you know, Everton's big old, you know, prep for the United game and the fans kind of, giving it two fingers up to the Premier League. And then their game was sort of ruined within 90 seconds for them. And this doesn't look a particularly easy trip either.
No, but I'm going to go Everton draw no bet. I mean, Forest do all of their best work at the City Ground. But that 3-0 against United, you know, Garnacho scores an unbelievable goal that changes the whole dynamic of the game, as you're kind of referring to. And in the first half, I still felt like they were the team more likely to get the next goal. The penalty decision is close one. I think sometimes they're given, sometimes they're not. And, you know, that really just took the game away from Everton. But they created chances. Onana, who we've given put the boot into, made some good saves. And I think generally speaking this season, Everton have played reasonably well, despite what obviously now the 10 points makes it more difficult for them. But yeah, Everton draw no bet.
We've got an 8 o'clock game on Saturday. It's Newcastle against Manchester United. Newcastle odds on 19-20, 11-4 the draw, 13-5. Manchester United, I mean, both of these sides have had European action midweek in quite demanding fixtures. How do you see this one playing out?
I thought Newcastle were an OK price, actually. I think, obviously, the injuries and the fact that they've played, put so much in against PSG will make people nervous. But look at their home form. Beat Arsenal, they beat Man City, they beat Aston Villa, they beat Paris Saint-Germain, they beat Chelsea, and then sort of more routine sort of, you know, who you'd expect them to beat, I suppose, Brentford, Palace and Burnley. But they've taken some big hitters down already at home. They have had an extra day compared to United to kind of get over that disappointment. United have got almost as many injuries as Newcastle. And yeah, I suspect that the games are, and I spoke to you earlier on in the season, didn't I, and said that I don't think Newcastle are in a great position to be able to play all of these games in quick succession. And I don't think that they are. But This is a winnable game, I think, against a United side that, despite what the form table says, still aren't playing very well.
Okay, on to Sunday's action. Bournemouth against Aston Villa. Villa going incredibly well, Mark. Were you impressed with them at the weekend?
No, I wasn't. Unai Emery, kind of high defensive line, been praised because it catches teams offside. Look, if the tactic was... to let Tottenham have chances and hope that they missed them or Emi Martinez make saves, then it worked. But I thought that first half, Villa were were not at the races for a large part.
I don't think the offside trap is luck, though, is it? I think there was a stat that they've caught teams offside. It might be this season or the last.
Spurs broke that line a number of times and, you know, just didn't score. That was the problem. Brennan Johnson missed a one-on-one. And Man Kulusevski, we put him up at 12-1 to score first. Inside, was it 3 minutes? He has, like, he's one-on-one with Martinez and hits the post. Like, I don't think it works. I'm not talking about the goals that were disallowed. That is part of what they're doing defensively. But I felt Tottenham broke that line far easier than they should have done. And actually, Unai Emery made two changes at half time. So he wasn't happy with the first half performance. Second half, that it was more controlled from them. You know, Ollie Watkins is a threat up front. I think this is an awkward game against improving Bournemouth. I'm going to go for Bournemouth or draw double chance. The Spurs game, Villa conceded an XG of 2.3. So that's not good defending. And Bournemouth at home, they've beaten Newcastle. They've drawn with Chelsea and West Ham. So they might be able to get something in this game where, of course, Villa have got a Europa Conference game on Thursday as well.
I mean, I guess the argument, Mark, from Villa fans would be, well, we've seen enough, and it clearly is a sustainable way of playing. And the credit
well,
to
it is at
is,
home. It is at home. They've won a lot of games.
Saw an issue and changed it. And so often managers don't have the ability to kind of change it in game like that. So credit where credit's due.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was just saying that I'm not sure that the initial tactic worked. I think that actually is somebody that is capable of changing matches. But when I watched them, because I think the initial question was I impressed with Aston Villa? I think my initial impression was I can see why they got absolutely tonked at Liverpool because of the space that they left in behind. And they also took a thumping at Newcastle. And maybe they just will be a couple of those a season. But, you know, risk and reward, isn't it?
Absolutely. Let's take a look at Chelsea against Brighton. Chelsea 7-10, 10-3 the draw, 16-5 Brighton. Intrigued to see how this one plays out.
Yeah, I mean, look, Brighton got the trip to Athens on Thursday. We're speaking before that. I mean, Ansu Fati and Lamptey, the latest two players to be ruled out with long-term injuries for Brighton. It feels like a theme, doesn't it, in the Premier League, how many teams are suffering with them at the moment. Yeah. Brighton are one of those that are not able to put out their best 11. Lewis Dunk, very influential defender, is suspended for the game as well. So, you know, I'm usually very pro Brighton, but I can't be on this occasion. I think it's all in place for Chelsea to bounce back from their disappointing performance at Newcastle. Don't want to back them to win the game because we just know that Chelsea have struggled in that department all season long. Going to play a couple of first goal scorers. So I'm going to split stakes on Enzo Fernandez at 16-1 and Conor Gallagher at 12-1. Enzo Fernandez has had 21 shots so far in the Premier League this season. Gallagher a little bit behind on that stat, but 43% of his shots have been on target. So I think that's a good return. And you know, I can't trust those Chelsea forwards, but maybe the goal might come from midfield.
Okay, great stuff. Liverpool, Fulham, 2 o'clock Sunday. Fours on Liverpool, 11-2 the draw, 8-1 Fulham. A routine win for Liverpool?
I think so. No, Alisson is obviously not ideal, but I think Kelleher has usually come in and looked very good. I mean, Klopp's going to have a problem at some stage because he's going to want to go out and become a first-choice goalkeeper somewhere. So I'm not that worried by the fact he's got to play. I'm going to go for Liverpool to win 3-0, 8-1. They've won 3-0 in three home Premier League games this season. I mean, Fulham, I just repeat myself. Like they got two penalties. I'm not sure that either of them were penalties against Wolves, but just don't offer much, do they, in the final third?
Bit stodgy whenever I've watched Fulham this season. Final Premier League game will be previewing this week's West Ham against Palace. This one, the live game. Even money, West Ham, 5-2 the draw, 14-5 Crystal Palace, Mark.
Yeah, both teams to score. Shade of odds on, about 4-5. 11 of West Ham's 13 Premier League games this season. I've seen BTTS. Palace with Elise back in the side, you know, are a different team and a different proposition. And this game might suit them more than, say, the one at Luton where they're expected to go and win. I don't mean, you know, they can sort of play their normal game. West Ham, defensively, probably not as good as David Moyes would have wanted so far this season. But they found a way to win, didn't they, at Burnley last week. So, yeah, both teams to score.
OK, let's talk to Dan Charles, EFL, and of course, FA Cup action this weekend too. Looking forward to it.
If you want some free football bets this season, we've got you covered. Simply head to racingpost.com/free bets and there you'll find over £200 worth of them for you to use this season. That's racingpost.com/free bets.
Yeah, always great to have Dan Charles alongside us. And it's FA Cup weekend. You know the cold snap is around the corner when you've got FA Cup action to look forward to. As always, if you're new to Bets Club, we start with a team in focus. Dan provides some insight into a team in the EFL. One to maybe add to your tracker for good or for bad reasons. Dan, who are we going to be taking a look at this week?
Yeah, well, I'm taking a look at Tranmere this week. I've had a really tough season at the moment, you know, struggling towards the bottom of League Two, but have improved quite a bit over the last few weeks. And their result on Tuesday, got a 2-2 draw away to Mansfield, really sort of caught my eye. One of them sort of coupon buster results. And you look into it and you think, have they been lucky there? And no, they weren't lucky at all. They've actually outshot Mansfield, seven shots on target to five. Apparently were a real, real threat on the counter-attack, and all the more impressive because they were quite light up front as well on Tuesday. Christian Dennis was injured, Connor Jennings suspended, Luke Norris injured as well. So they're missing sort of probably their three most effective forward players, Tranmere, and still perform really well. And it's a sign of Nigel Adkins was sort of, he was working upstairs there earlier in the season, and then he took over after Ian Dawes was sacked. He was the interim manager. Then he got the job on a permanent basis just before they lost at Stevenage 4-3 in the FA Cup. And ever since then, their performances, since he's got the job permanent, the players seem to be responding to him. They've gone four games unbeaten. So they had some really good home wins, 3-0 against Forest Green, 3-1 against Gillingham. And that result at Mansfield really catches your eye, considering they're going there to one of the toughest away trips in the division. They're going there with about three of their best attackers, and to play like that, I think they're a team to watch, you know, going forward. I don't see them going down. They're 9-5 for relegation. I wouldn't be, you know, taking those odds, and I'd be looking to get with them in the weeks ahead.
OK, things on the up then for Tranmere. Three selections across EFL football and FA Cup action this weekend, Dan. Where shall we start?
I'm going to start off with the only League One fixture of the weekend. Northampton and Portsmouth have both been knocked out of the FA Cup in the first round. They're playing each other at Six Fields. And I think this could be a surprise result, actually. Going to go for Northampton on the draw, no bet. I think 6-4 is a good bet. Portsmouth were unbeaten like Mansfield for quite a while. Then they had their first league defeat of the season last weekend. They lost 4-0 at home to Blackpool, which was a big, big drop-off in performance. They did respond on Tuesday with a 2-0 win at Burton, but you actually dig deeper into the details of that game. And Burton, who have been on a really, really poor run, they had a lot of chances in that game, won the shot count 20-13. And Portsmouth as well in that game, Colby Bishop, their main striker, who's got 11 goals for them, he went off injured as well at half-time, and that doesn't look like he's going to be back for a few weeks. So that's a big blow for Portsmouth, who also lost Regan Poole as well, an important defender for them about a month ago. So the spine of the team's taken a little bit of a battering, you know, in recent times for Portsmouth. And Northampton, on the other hand, they're three wins in a row at the moment, going really, really well. Probably one of the results of Tuesday night when they went and won 2-1 away to Blackpool as well. Fantastic result. So, Sam Hoskins, who's their star man, he got an assist and a goal. He's up to 11 goals now for the season. So Northampton going well, and I think they could nick a surprise win at the weekend.
Northampton in the draw no bet market. Let's take a look at some of the FA Cup games then, Dan. And what's your first in this angle?
First one I'm going to go for is Bristol Rovers of League One to win away to League Two Crewe. I think this will sort of go with the higher division team, their odds against, which I think is a decent bet. I mean, Bristol Rovers, there's a bit of talk that Andy Mangan, who's the interim manager after Joey Barton got the sack there, the latest talk is that he won't get the job full time, but he's actually done all right, Andy Mangan. They've only had one loss in seven since he's been there. Bit of a disappointing 1-1 draw at home to Orient on the Tuesday, where they conceded an injury time equaliser. But generally, they're playing quite well. And they're against a Crewe team that have They've suffered a lot of injuries recently as well. They're fifth in League Two, going reasonably well, but the effects of the injuries is starting to take shape. They went to Sutton, bottom of the League Two on Tuesday night, only managed to draw the game 1-1. Bristol Rovers at home is a much, much tougher fixture than Sutton away, so Bristol Rovers to win this one.
Okay, and the third and final pick for this week, Dan?
Yeah, all League One tie between Stevenage and Port Vale. I'm going to go for a shock here. Port Vale or draw double chance, so Port Vale to at least be in the hat after the weekend. Port Vale, they've had a bit of a tough run, no winning 10 games at the moment, but they have been getting quite a few of their players back from injury. They had a lot of injuries during this bad run they've been on. Played Derby at home on the Tuesday, lost 1-0, but Derby are on a great run, and apparently it was a tight game, could have gone either way. So big improvement in Port Vale's performance. And I think that I often think when a team's under pressure and a manager's under pressure in one of these cup games, it means they're not going to make too many changes. I think they'll probably go with a strong side. Stevenage's manager, Steve Evans, has already said he's going to make quite a lot of changes for this game. So that's another reason to sort of go with Port Vale. They had a really tough game against Peterborough at home on the Tuesday. Got a hard-fought 2-2 draw. But as I said, Evans says he's going to make quite a few changes. So with that in mind, take Port Vale to at least still be in the hat.
Okay, so we've got Northampton draw no bet, Bristol Rovers and Port Vale all draw in the double chance. Dan, thanks as always.
You're welcome, Jack.
Okay, let's get a roundup then of Mark's best bets for this week. We'll have a bet builder, a treble and also Mark's best bet. We shall start with the bet builder, Mark.
I'm going to go for Newcastle to win at home at St James's Park. You know, they've already taken down some of the real big hitters, PSG, Man City in the cup. They beat Arsenal, thumped Chelsea last week. One of the reasons they've been so good at home is the form of Ishak up front. So going to go for him to score. Obviously had his injury problems, but when he's been fit, absolute live wire, scored against Paris Saint-Germain. And the most likely person, I think, to take advantage of any kind of further nightmares in that Red Devils defence. And then to complete it, Joe Linton to be carded. He was a favourite of bet builders, sort of creators last season. He got loads of cards, felt like every time he played. He's only had four in all competitions this season, so he's behaving better. If you look at the games where he was booked, it was against Manchester United in the EFL Cup when Newcastle thumped them, against Chelsea, against Paris Saint-Germain, and against Man City. So in big games, he kind of tends to lose his head slightly. He's been booked in his last two games. And he was also sent off in Brazil against Argentina, another big game. So I think he's just somebody that gets caught up in the emotion of things.
Okay, that returns around about 9-1. Obviously, shop around for best price. So that looks good, Mark. Let's get a treble from you for this week.
Up for the FA Cup, Blackpool to beat Forest Green. Forest Green are really struggling at the moment in League Two. Blackpool got a lot of goals in them. Another team that got a lot of goals in them sort of in recent weeks, Wrexham, going for them to oblige a short price against Yeovil. And we'll complete the treble, which returns around about 3-1, by going for Atletico Madrid or draw in the double chance market away to Barcelona. I watched Barcelona on Tuesday. They were the live sort of game in on Australian TV. I did have 1.5 eye on that Newcastle v Paris Saint-Germain game. So it was difficult to kind of be drawn away from it. But what I did see at Barcelona was most unimpressive. I think you used the word stodgy earlier on the pod. I mean, Barca, so stodgy. Missing the injured Gavi, Lewandowski doesn't look like anything like the player he was a couple of years ago. And the Olympic Stadium is absolutely soulless. And I think that they're struggling to recreate that kind of Camp Nou vibe at their temporary home. Atletico Madrid are just, you know, a difficult team to put away, well organized. You know what they're going to do. And then they've got Morata and Griezmann up front as well. So yeah, Atletico to avoid defeat.
We spoke about long-term injuries earlier on in the show, didn't we? Such a shame that Gavit is he out for, was it?
Yeah, he's going to miss the Euros, ACL, yeah.
Not good at all. Finish things off this week with your best bet, Mark.
Yeah, I'm going to go for Man City to win and both teams to score against Tottenham. the Man City aspect of this, I think, is fairly obvious. Tottenham have been decimated by injury and suspension, and have got no centre backs that the manager trusts. You know, Eric Dier's probably the last man standing in that regard, and you know, Erling Haaland against Emerson Royale and Ben Davis feels like a big mismatch, really, just in terms of how they nullify that threat. This game was 4-2 last season. Spurs raced into a 2-goal advantage in Johnson, Kulusevski, Son. They've got players that can hurt City, no doubt about that, but they're probably going to have to score 3 or 4 to stand the chance. I don't think that they'll be able to do that. So Man City to win and both teams to score.
Okay, that's the best bet for this week. What's the rest of the week got in store for you, mate? It feels like whenever I ask this question, you're off to a birthday party or a dinner or something. You're a very, very sociable man, aren't you?
You could say this is my perfect weekend, Jack, really. I suppose maybe I could have fit in a bit of football, but I'm not sitting on the sofa all day Saturday. Wife and kids out sort of doing a Santa visit type thing on the Sunday. So yeah, I probably
fancy seeing Santa.
No, not this year. I think at the age of that, once you get to 40, it's probably time to give up the sitting on Santa's knee. So I'm going to avoid that. So a bit of peace and quiet on Sunday as well. Lovely jubbly.
Oh, sounds ideal. Thanks to everyone for tuning in for Bets Club. It's going to be a frantic December, so looking forward to bringing you these on a weekly basis. We'll be back next Thursday for another episode. If you are backing any of Mark's or Dan's tips this weekend, please remember to do so responsibly. Stay safe, everyone. See you later. Bye-bye.